In an age of information technology, it is more difficult for young people to pay attention to Kanians, the deep questions and difficulties they're facing. They may also forget to look up at the stars and be inspired by their ideals. Young people need educators, now more than ever, to help them embrace reality and discover their personal calling. Welcome to Kanians and Stars.
Welcome to the Kanians and Stars podcast. My name is Emma Cohen de Lara. Daniel, it's great to be here.
Great to be here too, Emma. Nice to see you again.
Good to see you. Today's topic is again going to be Leonardus Polo's philosophy. And we're going to talk about the Classicord, which is a topic close to my heart. So I'm excited about this conversation. Dan, last time we talked about the modern route. Could you maybe briefly say what Polo means by these routes?
Yeah. So I think, first of all, it's very important to mention that we are trying to address big questions that educators are facing today. Issues that people are facing today, issues like attention in class, but also, you know, trying to make sense of life, trying to face big questions, trying to really address some of the fundamental underlying concerns that people have in education, and trying to form young people, trying to give them hope, trying to help them face reality. So these are, I think, are very important issues that we are trying to face. And Leonardo Polo's philosophy helps us to do that. We saw that he's a very interdisciplinary philosopher, but that he's trying to really help us understand some of the core notions that we can get from the history of philosophy, that on the one hand help us to understand how we understand ourselves. And the modern route was a lot about trying to see how we in modern times understand ourselves, and that has a lot to do with the notion of production, so that we kind of produce ourselves, you could say. We value ourselves by the things that we produce, by the results we get. And so Polo called it the result principle. Like we value ourselves based on the results we get from our actions. And so,
Which I would say is a very helpful way of looking at ourselves, right? It's brought us a lot to this mentality of valuing production and valuing results and valuing the outcome. Although I must say, I think I mentioned this last time as well, that sometimes I also see a bit of a shadow side of the modern route or the modern way of understanding ourselves. And I sometimes see this with my students, that the very competitive attitude that this enlists can sometimes also be difficult for them.
Yes.
Because it seems never good enough.
Yeah.
Could you say that Polo thinks that that's maybe the challenge of the modern route?
Yeah, well, I think what Polo in the end tries to do is to give an overall view of what it means to be human that integrates the best of modern thought, of classical thought, but also of Christian thought, which we will talk about maybe in the next episode. But there are certainly things to learn from all three, and all three also have their challenges and things that they can be supplemented in. So I think it's very relevant for us to talk about what classical thinkers have to say, and maybe for some people that can be even a bit shocking, right? So, you know, because in the modern way of thinking, there's also this notion of progress. We're always getting better. We're always improving. And we see in a way that that's true, right? So we see that, at least in the technological realm, we've really advanced way further than the Greeks ever have, right? So, and then the question could be, you know, why would we even care about thinking about these things that the Greeks have said? You know, there were some old men back in Athens, and you know what do they have to tell about us? And still, I think that and what at least the thought of Polo has brought home to me, while also reading some of these Greek philosophers, of course, is that even though in the technological realm they perhaps didn't have so much to teach us, in the realm of some big ideas about what it means to be human, there's really something to be learned and to be had there. And I think it would be good for us to try and see how we can kind of integrate that with the insights that we have from technology nowadays.
Oh, I see. Yeah, because the way I understand it, the ancient Greeks actually did not value work, at least manual labor, very highly.
Yes.
So they were very, not very modern in that sense. But then you say Polis still thinks that there's something very valuable in their, in the root, in their worldview, yeah, or in their view of human nature,
yeah,
that we can actually learn from.
Yes, true. Yeah, so let's have a look at what that could be. Let's first say that, I first have to say that what I'm going to tell now is a little bit philosophical. I mean, they're philosophers after all, and so the notions I'm going to talk about are a bit philosophical. In the end, I think it's good to keep in mind that what these philosophers are saying is going to, in the end, be very practical also. I'm a theoretical biologist by training, and my professor in theoretical biology said, you know, the most practical thing is a good theory. because, you know, if you think about yourself in a good and healthy way, then it also means that you can kind of lead your life according to the theory, of course. But it has to be a complete theory, not a reductionistic one. So let's try and see whether we can get something good out of this classical thought. But you have to, and there's going to be very practical consequences also about things like attention and things like meaning and all these kind of things. But you have to bear with me for a while, if that's okay.
It's okay with me for sure.
Okay.
So I am curious. What does Polo see as sort of the central idea of the classical root?
Right. So the central notion, which again is quite a philosophical notion, is the notion of act. And I think that requires a bit of explanation. So what I tend to explain to my students is that the Greeks, when they looked around them, at the world around them, they saw that there were some things in the world around us that are timeless. Now, what do we mean by that, timeless? So, for example, when they looked up at the stars, you know, we are at the Canyons and Stars Institute, so we have to look at the deep things, but also at the stars. And in a way, the Greek philosophy is really about the stars, in the sense that we mean of kind of big ideals and so on. Because they looked up at the stars and they said, wow, they seem to be moving, right? They move, but they always seem to be moving in the same way. So they seem to be, they have certain patterns of movement, and those patterns of movement don't seem to change very much as the time goes on. So there are some things that seem to not be affected by time. So that's a very curious thing to observe, right? That there are such things in the world around us that are not changed by time. Now, of course, now from a scientific perspective, we know that that was not completely correct. We know that that actually the universe is still developing itself, that there's a certain expansion in the universe and so on. And so the stars are changeable in a way. However, their core insight, we know now that's also correct, because we know, for example, through science, if you look at something like the speed of light itself doesn't change with time. So it doesn't matter whether I measure it today, tomorrow, or a long time ago, the speed of light is always the same. And there's also some forces, like forces of gravity, nuclear forces, and so on. They seem to be the same always and everywhere. And whether I go to bed today and get up the next morning, that doesn't matter for the existence of these forces and of these nature constants, for example. So there seem to be things in the world around us that are not affected by the passage of time, that are always the same, that are in that way timeless.
And this is something that the ancient Greeks or the classical thinkers understood.
Exactly. So that's one of their core observations. A second core observation related to that is that these things that are not subject to time are not only in the world around us, but they're also actually inside of us. So, and we can see that very clearly if we think about abstract things like numbers. But it actually goes for ideas more generally. So if you look at a number, like a number one, that idea, the concept of one, again, if I go to bed and get up the next morning, the concept one hasn't changed. It's still the same thing. And that's a very beautiful thing to realize, that seemingly these concepts we have are not subject to time. Again, I mean, maybe it is true that we connect concepts in different way, and that as we think, we change them. But it's not because time passes that it happens, but because we work them, right?
So
they themselves are sort of timeless in that way. So now, the Greeks really thought a lot about change, right? So how do things change? And they saw and these kind of these timeless things, they called it actuality. Well, we still use that word, right? So if we for instance read the newspaper, we talk about actuality.
Mm-hmm.
And unless it's fake news, of course, the actuality is something that has actually come to pass, right? It's something that has actually happened. So it's fully real, right? An act is something that is there, that is real, and that's in a way timeless. And then an associated notion is that of potentiality. Potentiality is something that still has to come into being, so that there still is like a movement towards the actuality. Okay, now, so why is this so important? Why is this notion of actuality so important? The thing is that the Greeks saw that there are some things about us, so including our ideas, but also about human beings, that tend to be like always good for us.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is something that I think a lot of people nowadays have, of course, a problem with, because it's something also that the modern notion, the modern root is really kind of rebelled against. So it's not a very popular idea. But it's still an idea that, if you think about it, can give a lot of stability. So there seem to be some things about us that are the same for everyone and that don't change with time.
Okay, like the number one you were just explaining.
Like the number one. But of course, the number one isn't kind of a human ideal, right? But there are some. So in finding these ideas in us, so this number one, but other ideas, the Greeks also start to think about our rationality, what it means for us to be rational,
mm-hmm.
and they start to see that developing your rationality, for example, is one of these ideals that are always good for us as human beings.
Mm-hmm.
So it's always good for us to be rational, to be more rational. Of course, some people are better at it than others, but in the measure that we can, developing rationality is always a good thing.
And you would say across time and maybe also across place, that you see in different cultures, different times, that people always strive to understand things. Is that what you mean by rationality?
Exactly. Try to understand things and try to think about them.
Mm-hmm.
And that is something that is helpful and good for us.
Yeah.
And so the Greek ethics kind of builds forward on that as well.
Mm-hmm. Can you say a bit more about that? Or is the Greek ethics simply that we should strive to do that thing that is sort of seems to be an unchangeable truth for us as human beings, that we seek to understand the world?
Yes. So... of course, they have ideas about what this truth then is for us, right? So there are basically two main groups of ideals in Greek, classical Greek thought. So one is the ideal of contemplation, right? So again, looking at the stars and amazing, being, you know, seeing the canyons and the stars and saying, wow, you know. But then also rational contemplation, which means what can I understand about these stars? What can I understand about the canyons? What can I understand about our lives? And so trying to rationally think and order the world in a way, rationally, that is one of their ideals, kind of the rational contemplation ideal. The second ideal, which is associated with that, is kind of ordering your practical life according to this rational order. So if you've thought about how to think about what would be a good way to live, then actually implementing that. And that is the notion of virtue. So that means that we can actually, we have a certain ideal. So for example, I'm a student and I want to be able to study well. Okay. Then I know that, that to do that, for instance, it's very helpful to have a certain structure in my day. So to get up at a certain time, to eat then, and to start studying at a certain time so that I can focus my attention. right, on what's going on there. Now, I first need to think about it rationally. So what would be a good structure for me for my day? And it may be different for different people, but at least thinking about that, you know, how do I work? Am I a morning person? Am I an evening person? You know, what kind of things work for me? Think about it. Make that structure. But then being virtuous also means that knowing that that is good for me, actually being able to implement that. So being able to say, now I'm actually going to get up on time. Now I'm actually going to have my breakfast. Now I'm actually going to sit down and study and actually be able to focus on this. And so those are, you know, bringing those into
practice.
And yeah, then they have some core notions developed, which kind of help us think about how to do that also.
That's interesting. So it's actually directly relevant to, well, to us educators and to us trying to help our students also live, live good lives. But I wonder, because we talked earlier, of course, within the modern route, we also seek to understand the world. And I think in the modern route, understanding world very much has to do with, again, this central notion that Polo points out of being productive.
Yeah.
So maybe also of molding the world so that, or working with the world so that we actually produce the things and create and innovate the things that make our lives better.
Yeah.
But it seems to me, as the way you put it now, that the classical route, we seek to understand the world not so much for an extrinsic motivation, not so much to get an output, but maybe just intrinsically, because we wonder about things or because we are just amazed by things in the world, maybe the beauty in the world, the beauty of the stars and so forth. Could you say that there's a different motivation going on?
Absolutely, yeah. So, whereas in the modern conception of things, being able to produce and being able to get results is very central. But in the classical view of things, it's also the notion that we, you know, if we act according to these ideals that are good for us, it's not just that we therefore become more productive, because that for the Greeks was not so important. But what was important for them is that we make ourselves better.
Mm-hmm.
So that we live up to the ideal that we know is good for us. And if we do that, we become better human beings. And therefore, we become happier. We also become more free. Mm-hmm. So there's all kinds of notions, but you could call this... So the modern notion is more tied to what we would call extrinsic motivation, things that lie outside of us, that motivate us. Whereas this would be more intrinsic motivation. So a motivation to develop ourselves. And I think, I mean, a lot of students, when they study, so of course, you know, you may want to, you know, get a good job later or get high grades. But I think for many people also, just, you know, the joy of studying is, and also the fact of developing yourself and becoming a more knowledgeable person is actually very important. And that would be more the intrinsic motivation that goes with the classical thinking.
Okay, interesting. So that is what we get when we turn to the classical route, and maybe also when we read some texts from that time period.
Yeah.
We become more aware of the value of that idea of the ideal. Is that an ideal of inner growth, would you say?
Yeah, I think so. The ideal of being able to contemplate rationally requires a certain inner growth. The ideal of being able to live virtuously, you know, goes step by step. So you have the ideal first, but living up to it is difficult, and at first it may be very, very hard. But then after a while, because you practice, it becomes easier. And not only becomes it becomes easier in the sense that it's easier to do it, but it also becomes more enjoyable. So you also kind of also forms what you enjoy and don't enjoy. So there's really kind of an inner formation going on while you kind of try to strive up to these ideals.
Yeah.
And that's a form of internal growth.
Yeah. Yeah. And there the notion of human happiness was very central, of course, to the ancient Greeks.
Yeah.
And did not have to do with output, but had to do with becoming who you can be, basically.
Yeah.
And if we go back, because that's what we talked about in the first podcast as well, this we are both educators, and we both notice, I think, as many educators in the world, notice that our students sometimes struggle with attention and with focus.
Yes.
Just because there are so many distractions and there's social media, and it just seems that it's actually more difficult today for students to read long pieces of text, to think about something more deeply, even though they also have a need for that.
Yeah.
And this is where the classical route comes in, I think, in order to, help our students and enrich our students' lives. Is that something that we can go back to the classical route for?
I think so. But I think you have a lot of ideas, so why don't you share them?
Well, I have to say that personally, when I became acquainted with the Greeks and the Greek philosophers, that was certainly something that became very valuable to me.
Yeah.
To read texts by Plato, by Aristotle, and to remind myself that this ideal that we don't only seek knowledge in order to change the world, but we also seek knowledge for knowledge.
Yeah.
And that's actually very joyful to read and to study and to think about things.
Yeah. And how do you think it can address this attention problem that students have nowadays? What can the classics contribute to that?
Well, it's not easy, but I think two things. I think our attention span is you can practice it.
Yeah.
I would almost say it's a kind of a muscle. It's not a real muscle, but we know that over time, if students give dedicated attention to something, for example, reading in class, and maybe at first you only read 10 minutes and maybe 15, and at some point they get the practice of it. They get the habit of it. It's something that the Greeks, I think, would call a virtue. So they become used to something. They acquire a good habit. And I think that's very valuable. And then the nice thing about many of these classical texts is that they actually explicitly address the value of contemplation.
Yeah.
So it's a virtue. They talk about the contribution of it to human flourishing.
Yeah. I can say something from my own experience as we are at the college we teach at. We lecture and we also tutor. And there was one student that I kind of guided through his studies, and he had ADD, so attention deficit disorder. And he really had a hard time focusing. And so he went to a psychologist and they helped him. They gave him some pills to help him focus on. And he told me that at first that really helped him to kind of the chemicals kind of helped him to get into the focused mood and to really then build a habit of studying. And once he did that, after a while, he could get rid of the pills.
Okay.
So he could stop using the pills and he was able to continue on his own because he had built this habit of studying. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a very nice example of what you're saying, right?
Yeah. And so I think we both agree that Polo does a very helpful job of pointing out that this is what the classical route brings us, or the classical self-understanding.
Yeah. Maybe there's one other thing that we could say about, how from this classical perspective could you address this attention issue? So one thing is really that the notion that you can actually sit down and think about, how do I want to address this? So for example, if I notice that my smartphone is always capturing my attention, right? It is possible to step back and think and say, okay, this is a problem. How am I going to address this? And then think of strategies in doing so. And there are strategies like leaving your phone outside of the study room or not taking it into your bedroom at night so that you're not, watching videos at night all the time, which then leads you not to be concentrated during the day and so on. So there are, if you think about it, it's not that hard to think of strategies that can really help you to students to focus better.
Yeah.
But of course, also implementing these strategies takes a bit of time and dedicated attention as well. And it's, I think that the description of this, of how a virtue goes, that in the beginning it's always difficult, you have to overcome a hurdle, but it's also very good that after a while it's no longer a hurdle, but it's actually a downward slope. It becomes easier to do that after a while, and it even becomes enjoyable. So it's not like, okay, so there's like an initial hill to climb, but afterwards there's also the valley to enjoy. So I think that's also a very encouraging prospect.
Yeah. And also, as we think in a way that the classical route complements, right? The modern route complements this focus on productivity and so forth. We need this quietness, this sustained attention, this contemplation, also in order to be productive in a modern sense. One other thing that I think Polo is bringing out is that the ancients, the classical thinkers, also had greatly valued relationships, or at least friendships between people. Is this also something that can this bring something to our modern existence and our modern students?
Absolutely, but again, I'm going to return the question. You're the expert.
Oh, I'm not so sure, but it is of course a topic that that I find very positive. There's not a lot of attention in modern philosophy to friendship. Yeah. And so for me, and also seeing Polo pick up on that, was very valuable. Because in our everyday lives, friendship, and especially for young people, play an important role.
Yeah.
And so it's worthwhile to think more about why that is so, and what friendship brings us. And also what friendship brings up in terms of self-understanding.
Yeah.
And I think there that the classical notion that life is not only about productivity and output and results, but there are some sort of intrinsic goals that we value in life that might not, because it would be odd to think in terms of a good friendship just in terms of results, right? Just in terms of output.
Yeah.
Friendship is something that is intrinsically enjoyable. And that also connects to this notion of virtue that you talked about earlier, because I think this is at least Aristotle's understanding, that good friendships also help friends grow, help them achieve inner growth.
Yeah.
And to get that notion also across also to students who are very intensely experiencing friendship, right? And very keen on making friendship. That's why the corona time are so difficult, especially for young people, because their social life is so restricted.
Yeah.
That is thinking about what friendship is and what it brings us is a very beautiful topic, also within the classroom.
Yeah. So, and do you see that friendship isn't somehow related to this? These ideals of virtue and self-development?
I think so, and at least for Aristotle it is, and I think Leonardo Polo picks up on that, because Aristotle is very explicit that as human beings we are social beings.
Yeah.
So we always live in relationship with others.
Yeah.
And an island is either a god or a beast, so... But we are not gods, we are not beasts, we live in communion with each other.
Yeah.
And that has to do also with what makes for a good human life. So relationships are very important. So it's a worthwhile topic, I think, also in education.
Maybe we should, you know, we've been praising the classical route a lot, and I think it has a lot to offer us, but maybe we should also emphasize a little bit, you know, some of the downsides or some of the shortcomings. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've talked about one shortcoming, which is the idea of being, it doesn't really value practical life a lot, and we've seen that so modernity tries to kind of overturn that and go completely the other direction in the sense of maybe even overvaluing practical life. But again, well, at least valuing it, because it is, of course, important. But then I think there's also this other notion, which is, or at least a criticism, which I think in modernity has had its weight, which is that somehow, you know, this idea that, okay, there are some ideals that are the same for all of us, and that so in a way that we all should strive for also, right? And that can feel a little bit, I don't know, suffocating, right? Mm-hmm. Are we kind of forced into this this kind of harness of, you know, always having to follow these ideals, and there's no way out, so to speak. So it can be a little bit suffocating. Do you have any ideas about that, how we could...
Yeah, well, I think it is a good point. And I think one of the nice or the helpful things in Leonardo Polo's philosophy is that he tries to tell us that maybe the best way to understand ourselves has to do with all three of the roots, right? Not just the modern, not just the classical, but all three, including the Christian root. And so then you can ask the question, what is the classical root missing? And it's missing this aspect of the modern root in terms of the value of work and production and output and innovation. I mean, if we look at the world around us, but it's also missing something else that you're pointing towards, in the sense that I think the ancients did not really value a certain aspect of reality, namely that in a way each of us, we're all unique human beings, and we're all unique persons. In a way, so I'm Emma. My life is in some aspects really unique, and that kind of appreciation, and therefore also my choices and my ideals are also very personal. And that appreciation of the personal, I think, is still missing in the ancient way of thinking about things.
And is that somehow important to the challenges we're facing now? Or
I would say so, for sure. Yeah, I think many educators will recognize that certainly, especially young people, are looking, they're not just looking for the best life as an abstract ideal, but they're looking at the best life for them personally. Yeah. And they're also discovering themselves as unique human beings. Who are they as unique individuals? And how do they as unique individuals want to live their lives? And that can be a bit frightening even, because if you are unique, then who do you have to look up to or to compare yourself to? But maybe there's a notion of the unique human being, the unique person that Polo finds in the Christian root, that is a more productive point of departure. And maybe that's something that the classical root was missing, and that we can also next podcast address.
Sounds like a plan. So I think maybe we should leave it this for now. Well, thanks a lot, Emma. I think we had a nice conversation. I hope you've learned something about classical philosophy, how it could help us now. And we'll dive in the third and last podcast in this series on the three roots of Leonardo Polo next time. So please join us then to think about what it means for us to be a person, and also how it can give hope to young people, which I think is one of the core things that we are trying to strive for in Canyons and Stars. So see you next time.
This was Canyons and Stars. For more resources, visit canyonsandstars.org. If you would like to support our work, please go to canyonsandstars.org and click on Contribute. Or find us on patreon.com/canyonsandstars. Because young people need educators, now more than ever, to help them embrace reality and discover their personal calling. Canyons and Stars. Let's grow together.